From Studio F, high atop Five Bush Media World Domination Headquarters in suddenly very snowy Rochester, New York, it is the Top of the Tower podcast for the middle of December. I'm Scott Five Bush, and we've got a bunch of things to talk to you about this week that I think justified doing the podcast a day later than usual, recording this on a Thursday afternoon instead of a Wednesday, in part because it gives us an opportunity to hear the final moments of a community broadcaster that perhaps should have gotten a little bit more attention than it did, and talk a little bit about the state of small-town AM radio these days. We'll talk also a little bit about the state of some big town radio, in particular sports radio, as we prepare to say goodbye to Mike Francesa as he ends his reign on WFAN in New York, and some of the changes that are coming there and some of what he meant to that format. But before we do that, I want to double back around sort of to this topic of small town AM radio, because it, of course, has been a passionate subject for a man who is very much in the news today. Just a few hours ago, as we record this, Chairman Ajit Pai presided, as you no doubt know by now, over the FCC's controversial 3-2 vote that overturns the existing net neutrality rules. Not going to spend very much time here arguing the yeses and the noes of that particular decision. The odds are, if you're the sort of person who listens to this podcast, you've already heard the arguments and you've already made up your mind one way or another. So I'm not going to try to sway you one way or another about that. What I do want to talk about, however, is process, and in particular about Commissioner Pai, about Chairman Pai, and about some of the ways that the FCC makes its decisions. Because, of course, if you take a look on your favorite social media platform right now, the odds are that you are probably seeing a whole bunch of people saying a whole bunch of very nearly unprintable things about the FCC and about Chairman Pai. And without necessarily sticking up for his decision itself, I just want to point out how interesting it is the way in which this decision was made as compared to the way in which he has reacted to AM radio station owners. Because in a lot of ways, he has probably been the most open set of ears to broadcasters' concerns in recent memory, probably at least in the last 15, 20 years. A lot of us believed, and to a certain extent still believe, that he really came to the commission with an intention to listen to what broadcasters wanted from him. And we've seen the results of that. We have seen, you know, whether or not, again, you think it's actually about revitalizing AM per se, there is no question that he's listened with very open ears to the concerns of AM radio station owners. He's probably been in more AM radio stations in the last couple of years than most FCC commissioners ever set foot in. He has almost certainly appeared on their airwaves much more than any other FCC commissioner has. And in terms of most of the ways in which the FCC conducts its process, he's been fairly responsive. Now, I say that as somebody who has filed in FCC proceedings. One of what I think is sort of my responsibilities to the industry is somebody who follows this stuff closely and who's actively involved in actually filing with the FCC. I think it's not only an opportunity, but something of a duty to participate in these rulemaking proceedings, to file comments that say to the bureaucrats who run the media division, who run the audio division, who run the media bureau, who run the audio division in particular, hey, here are some things that you need to know about from those of us who are in the trenches on this day-to-day. And here's the thing. In those sorts of circumstances, my perception is that regardless of who is in charge at the FCC from one administration to the next, they read the comments. They listen to what we have to say. They don't always rule the way we would like them to rule necessarily, but there is at least an actual process there. And I'm big on process. There is an actual process there in which I can say to the FCC, you know what, this whole public file thing really does need to be revisited because, and here are some real-life examples of how nobody looks at a public file and how irrelevant it is and the amount of staffing that's required to keep it up. And there is, or at least has been, some kind of belief that that's getting listened to. I've seen it happen. I've participated particularly in the in these AM rule changes. And there's no doubt that that somebody at the FCC is actually listening. I know my stuff gets quoted. I've seen other stuff get quoted from other respected people, probably with a lot more expertise than I have, when it comes to some of these rule changes. It shows up in the final rulemakings that somebody is paying attention to what's being said and that the public interest is at least somehow being observed here. And that's where I think the real question comes up with this process. Because there is no question, first of all, that this whole net neutrality proceeding has brought in far more public comment than the FCC's systems ever get on anything, and by several orders of magnitude. And that's fine. We know that a lot of it has been driven by social media campaigns. We know that John Oliver on HBO has been sounding this particular alarm bell for quite a while and getting his viewers to comment. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that kind of public participation, whether it is very much informed or whether it's sort of more of an emotional reaction. The specific issue, of course, that I have, and it's one that's been raised a lot by the minority members of the commission, is the question of how much of this alleged public input was actually manufactured. And I know personally people who have gone and looked up their names on the comments for this and have found that there have been fake comments submitted under their own names or under their relatives' names that are diametrically opposed to the comments that they actually would have submitted. We know this has been happening. There's no question about it, and I think it is unfortunate at the very least, and I could probably use some stronger words than that, that the commission hasn't seemed to want to take more seriously some of these allegations that have been coming from state attorneys general around the country who have been looking at this and saying, hey, wait a minute, you have a real problem with your public comment proceedings here. And then on top of that, frankly, to just take all of these public comments and apparently just sort of shove them to the side and not even really engage with them. I'm not even sure it's really going to do the FCC's majority any favors going forward, because this is something that is going to be scrutinized very closely by Congress, because there is some sort of bipartisan consensus, I think, at this point, that these are rules that that may need to be revisited. And I think especially as this goes to the courts, that they are going to look unfavorably on the way in which public comment seemed to have been largely ignored here. So I'm not sure it's a very bright day for the FCC. And I think it's unfortunate, because I think there are some things that the FCC is doing that are kind of right now. We'll talk a little bit more about where things stand with these with the translator window later on in the broadcast, too. Good point to mention, of course, that the Top of the Tower podcast is brought to you by Feibusch Media. We are gearing up right now to make translators happen for AM broadcasters in the new year in 2018, which means that we are available right now for you to get on our list, which is filling up fast. If you are an AM broadcaster and you want to figure out if you haven't taken advantage yet of the AM translator rulings to try to get your hands on a new translator, we're here to help you, but we won't be for much longer. And, of course, that filing window comes around before you know it at the end of January, so we are already starting to do some work for clients on that. Get in touch with us right now at FeibuschMedia.com, and we can help you with that.
From Wayne to Pompton Lakes to Patterson, the award-winning news center.
29 degrees with clear skies. Good evening. I'm Chad Robison. Bergen County Prosecutor Gurbir Graywall could make history by becoming the first Sikh ever to serve as a state attorney general in the country. Graywall has been prosecutor in Bergen County since January 2016.
North Jersey 1500 WGHD, Madonna right there. How many times on the air over the years did I say, Madonna, you know she wanna? 32 GHD degrees on the outside right now. We were talking about Dan Ingram and Soupy Sales and Tiny Tim and some of the people that passed this way. I want to talk about WGHD radio before we leave you this afternoon. We got about 9 minutes left. This was a unique radio station, thanks to John Silliman. Probably one of the most, what can I say? Just so many talent has traveled through here throughout the years. And everybody gave 100% on the air, in my opinion. It was a unique radio station. We were a local radio station, yeah. But there was a certain magic about this radio station. You know, we played great music. We tried to always entertain you. I think that was it. Everybody here tried to entertain you and inform you. And it's all live. It was all live. It was all local. So many radio stations today, you know, they push a button or the disc jockey does voice tracks and this and that. We never did that. John Silliman never did that. We were live. We were local. Mistakes were there. Sometimes we played the wrong side of a record. There you were. It was real. And going to miss that. It is unique in radio these days. And to lose WGHT radio is definitely sad, because I don't think that there are too many radio stations like this one across the nation. So to leave this radio station today is very, very sad for me. I have had a ball. I have been here for 24 years. I played the music that I wanted to play. I had the guests on the show that I wanted to have. And you can pin it all on John Silliman's door. He was the one that, like I told you when I had him on my show yesterday, you know I annoyed him at least once or twice. I'm probably annoying him now because I'm talking too much, but it all belongs to John Silliman, and we thank John. He's responsible, of course, for the programming here at the radio station, but I think everybody on the staff just did a tremendous job because we all believed in what a local radio station can do to try to satisfy the listeners. So it is a shame that we are leaving you, but we leave with a smile because I think, we accomplished what we set out to do. Play the music that you wanted to hear, took your request, did the contest, and most of all, kept it local and try to have a good time with it. At least I did anyway. Let's do a couple of commercials here, and then I guess we'll kind of nail it down.
Harsh weather can cause scratches. And
so there's a little bit of audio from the last hours of WGHT. If you've never heard of WGHT, you could probably be forgiven for that. If you've never heard of WGHT and you lived in northern New Jersey, you probably could even be forgiven for that. This was a fairly low-profile AM station that lasted almost exactly 53 years. It signed on as a daytimer on 1500 as WKER back in 1964. It had been WGHT for the last 20-some years, had been owned by the same guy for the last 20-some years. And it went off the air today at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on this Thursday afternoon as we're recording this. And let's talk a little bit about why, because it says something about the state of small-town AM radio today and, of course, exactly the sorts of things that the FCC says they've been trying to address in this whole AM revitalization proposal. Nobody, I think, would argue that trying to serve a suburban area 30-some miles outside of New York City with a 250-watt daytimer at 1500 on the dial in the year 2017 was probably going to be a relatively difficult thing to do. This is not a radio station that was ever going to make huge amounts of money these days. It was furthermore faced with some other difficult circumstances. The building and the directional array sat in a floodplain that flooded fairly routinely. The lower couple of floors of the building, I think, had been cleared out and rebuilt several times in the last few years. So that was another strike against it. But when it was good, WGHT was very, very good. It was attentive to local issues. It had a local newsroom. It brought in local voices. It was consistently live, in part because it actually had no automation that would have allowed it to operate unattended. And it provided something that was a little bit different on the radio dial. It was playing oldies long after you couldn't get oldies on the New York City FM dial anymore. And it was speaking to local needs to a certain extent. And yet, at the same time, it came down to the point where, for a variety of reasons, the owner was just about ready to turn in the license and then ended up donating it instead to the local community, to the borough there of Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. And we don't know exactly what's going to become of it at this point. It appears from at least where I'm sitting right now that it was as much a land deal as anything else, that the borough would really kind of like this to operate eventually. They'd like to use the land eventually as a public park. And so nobody really knows what becomes of this 1500 kilohertz facility going forward. The town apparently has to keep the license running for a few years in order to maximize the tax deduction for the seller, for the donor, in order to make that work for him with tax laws. But one way or another, WGHT, as we've known it, is gone. The people who helped keep the radio station on the air are now out of work, and it's one less voice that's out there. And it's interesting in part because WGHT is not alone. If you go about another 25, 30 miles to the north, you find yourself in Rockland County, New Jersey. And Rockland County has had an AM radio station there called WRCR that's actually been completely silent for the last few months after a lease dispute at the site where it had been operating. This, of course, was the station that had worked with its local members of Congress to get sort of a rare exception made that would allow it, and it only, to file for a unique spot on the expanded AM band. So they went from 1300 on the dial as a three-tower daytimer with a very, very unfavorable directional pattern to become a full-timer all the way up at 1700 on the dial. And they tried. You got to give them some credit for trying, at least. They put a studio right in the minor league ballpark. So anytime anybody came to a game, there were the call letters, WRCR, out there in left field. They brought community voices in, but something never quite clicked right. Whether it was the programming, whether it was the publicity, there were a lot of people in Rockland County who to this day never knew that that radio station existed. I have family there, and my family down there, they are not radio people. That would be kind of an understatement. They are really not radio people. Which is fine, but it's been interesting to see over the years whether they have any awareness that this station exists in their community, where they've put kids through school, where their kids have been involved in school sports, where they pay taxes, where they vote for the politicians who have their voices heard on the radio station. And I don't think in all the time that my family down there has lived in Rockland County that they have ever even known that this radio station existed, never mind actually thinking to put it on to hear what it's doing. That's a tough thing for local radio. And it doesn't matter at that point whether you are just an AM signal, whether you have gone streaming only as they've tried to do the last few months while they've tried to find a new facility to do an AM signal from. It doesn't matter. If you do not even have that minor level of visibility so people know you exist, how do you succeed? I don't know the answer to that. It's a question that we've talked about with some guests on the podcast before. But it's one ultimately that radio stations themselves have to answer. If you don't put the energy and the money into being visible, into putting up billboards, into doing direct mail, into being out there involved in community events, how are people ever going to find you to even want to try to tune into you? So WRCR at the moment also sits dark. They apparently are trying to locate a replacement transmitter site, which they've had very little success in doing so far. And the word is apparently they also may have found a new studio location, and they're giving up their space in the ballpark. So they're not dead yet. Can't count them out completely, but it's not looking much better for them than it looks for poor old WGHT. So listen to a little bit more of the end of WGHT, and then back with some thoughts about some changes in some much bigger parts of the radio industry.
621-6161.
And North Jersey 1500 GHT. Let's do the weather, brought to you by Wayne Subaru. One last time here at GHT. It's quite fitting. They've been with us quite a while, thanks to Bob. And we've got the high of 33 right now, and it looks like down to 13 will go. Mostly clear tonight. Mostly cloudy and 30 tomorrow. 35 for your Saturday. Mostly sunny. And big thanks to Carol and Charlie for requesting I'll Be Seeing You, an appropriate sign-off song at North Jersey 1500 GHD. But we just don't sign off that way, do we? At North Jersey 1500 GHD, currently 34.
North Jersey 1500.
The incredible Sly and the Family Stone. Have a great one. North Jersey 1500. Thanks for all the listening and all the participating and all the fun at GHT.
This is WGHT, Pompton Lakes, New Jersey, at the end of our traditional broadcast day. WGHT operates on an assigned frequency of 1500 kilohertz with 1000 watts of daytime power as authorized by the Federal Communications Commission. At this time, our AM side will shut down to clear this frequency for nighttime operation of 1500 kilohertz in Washington, D.C. WGHT provides local service to the North Jersey community from studios and transmitting facilities in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. We will return to the air tomorrow morning. In the meantime, programming will continue in just a moment on TuneIn and WGHTRadio.com. Thank you for choosing North Jersey 1500 WGHT, and good night.
It is the Top of the Tower podcast. A reminder before we head into our last segment here, we are brought to you by the Fibush Media Tower Site Calendar. We just got a new box of them back from the printer. We are still shipping them out. If you act right away, Lisa might even be able to get one in the mail to you so you have it in time for Christmas. But you got to act soon because we're running out of time on that. Either way, you can have it by the start of 2018 if you go now to the Fibush.com store right there on the front page of Fibush.com. It's a neat calendar. I think you'll like it. Get some as gifts to hand out to all of your engineering buddies for the holidays. They'll appreciate it too. So we close this week by talking about somebody who is just about to say his last words on the radio station that he has called home for 30 years. And that, of course, is Mike Francesa over at WFAN in New York. And we'll try to listen maybe next week to a little of his finale. It ought to be an interesting show. As we are recording this on Thursday afternoon, he's doing a very public Next to the Last Day on stage at the Paley Center, the former Museum of Television and Radio in New York City, and bringing on a lot of big-name guests. His final show on Friday, apparently, is just him in a studio, no media allowed inside, just Mike and the callers who really made him. I do not think we will see his like again. Whether you love him or hate him, and I think there are probably plenty of people who fall on both sides of it, I think it's hard to argue that he didn't bring about some really major changes in what we think of as radio formatics. If you were to go back and listen to the very first day of WFAN when it first signed on as the first all-sports radio station up at 1050 on the dial in 1987, you would find it, I think, almost unlistenable now. I think you'd find it sleepy. I think you would find it dull. And I think you would listen, as a lot of people did back then, and say, how is this thing ever going to get an audience? And who thinks that all sports could ever really be a format? It took people to come along, like Mike Francesa, and, yeah, like the Mad Dog, and eventually Jim Rome across the other side of the country, and some voices like that who understood that it really wasn't just talking about sports, that it was the same thing that always has made for interesting talk radio, that it was engaging an audience, that it was having a strong opinion, that it was being entertaining, that really made it a great format. And Mike Francesa did that, for better or for worse, for 30 years. And I think talk radio, sports radio, is going to sound rather different without him. And while we were talking about talk radio in New York, we send out our best wishes as well to Curtis Sliwa over at WABC. He is going to be off the air there for at least a little while. He's undergoing surgery to correct. Apparently, he's been suffering from Crohn's disease. It's been causing him a lot of pain in recent months. And he posted that he's going to be off the air for a little while dealing with that. Certainly, we wish the best for him. Interesting times, of course, also for WABC, as we are seeing Cumulus trying to cut some of its costs around the country as it goes into its prepackaged bankruptcy. And so they're cutting back on some local talk hosts. We just saw in Chicago that they are getting rid of one of their local shows on WLS and stretching things out, going a little bit more syndicated there. It's going to be interesting to see if anything changes at WABC, where they've been trying at least to be a little bit more local there, and where Curtis Sliwa has been a big part of that. So we'll see if anything gets set to change there. And, of course, you always have to wonder, as some of these long-running voices say goodbye, like Mike Francesa, what about Don Imus, who's still on in the morning there? How much longer is he going to stick around at WABC? Just some of the questions that we will be tackling as we head into the new year here on the Top of the Tower podcast. We always enjoy hearing from you, too. Check in with us in the comments here by email at scott@fibush.com, on Facebook, on the Northeast Radio Watch page, wherever you want to reach out to us. We would be delighted to hear from you. That's it for this Top of the Tower podcast. We will be back next week for at least one more of these before Christmas. Again, the calendar is still available for you at fibush.com at the store. And, of course, still some time to get you on board as well as a translator client of ours on the Fibush Media side of things at fibushmedia.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.